evening, ladies and gentlemen, and it's us back with another Cumbrian Cult Cinema Cast. So there's me, PD, Daz Johnson, and Andrew Woff, the Woffster.
Howdy.
And tonight, we're talking about horror anthologies. Mm-hmm. I think over the years we've all loved a horror anthology. We are going to do a specific one on the Amicus films, but we will get a little mention tonight because a couple of the lads have picked some, but we are going to do an Amicus horror anthology podcast at some point between us. So horror anthologies tonight. I think we've all enjoyed them over the years.
Yeah.
And they've been on the go since God's film had started. I think there was a couple of French ones, and then there was The Dead of Night, which is fantastic, which was 40s, I think, 1945 possibly, which is just excellent. If you haven't seen it, find it, see it, watch it, lovely. And there's a ventriloquist dummy story in there, which we all love.
It always scary.
Always scary. And you know, and you know, there was the odd one, but they didn't really come back until
Magic.
Amicus. Sorry. Anthologies, the horror anthologies really didn't make a proper comeback until the Amicus started with Dr. Terror's House of Horrors. But as I say, we're not here to talk about all the Amicus ones tonight. We're going to do our own a separate podcast on that. So I'll get started as usual. And my first one for the evening is Mario Bava's Black Sabbath. And that's the film and not the band from the Black Country, who they stole. They were rehearsing, they were called Earth at the time, Black Sabbath.
Earth.
And they came out and they seen people going to the cinema to see Black Sabbath.
All right.
Bang, name change.
The rest is history.
Heaviest rock band ever known. Yeah. I still think they are the heaviest.
Yeah.
You know, there's all these ones who come after, but they're just copying Black Sabbath. And Black Sabbath were influenced heavily by the Beatles.
Yeah. Helter Skelter.
Helter Skelter, which is seen as the first heavy metal track.
Yeah, true.
So let's get off heavy metal. Apologies. This was the first Bava film I ever saw. And I can't remember if it was on a tape or TV. I have got the tape somewhere in amongst.
Yeah, I've seen it.
This myriad of VHS in this room. And I just thought it was brilliant. And it was kind of the first Mario Bava film I kind of, you know.
Hmm.
Didn't know it was Mario Bava at the time because it was just a boy.
A wee whippersnapper.
That's it. And it was Three Tales of Terror, all introduced by Boris Karloff.
The King of Horror.
The King of Horror. And in Italy it was called Three Faces of Fear. It was a low budget film. It wasn't a hit at the time. It done all right, but it wasn't a hit at the time. And obviously over the years, it's become very, very influential. You know, I mean, the way he uses light and sound, which is a very Italian thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just absolutely fantastic. And as I said, all the cast, it's mostly Italian or international stars. And it was Boris Karloff that drew me into it because I was a fan of the Universal, Frankenstein and the likes of.
Yeah, yeah.
And who isn't, because let's be honest, Boris Karloff is still one of the greatest horror actors of all time.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I just hope this new generation who are coming through remember the stars like Karloff and Lugosi and Lee and Cushing and, you know,
Price,
Lon Chaney and Lon Chaney Jr. and all them boys. Because
John Inman,
that's it. I'm free.
That's the scariest of all.
That's it. It's just a fantastic film. Three really good stories. I think my favourite is the Werdelak story, which is the vampire story with Boris Karloff himself in it, not just introducing it. And he kind of, the Werdelak vampires are, they're like, they only go after people they love.
All right.
And, you know, it's that kind of Ten Little Indians.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? One by one, the family get knocked off,
yeah,
or turned into vampires,
mm.
And it's just fantastic, absolutely, yeah.
I've just looked it up because I haven't seen it myself, I have to admit. And it says that some of the stories were by Anton Chekhov.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Like, I did a lot of his stuff when I did theatre studies in sixth form, so, like, that's kind of...
I was going to get to that, but...
It's all right. Sorry, man. Sorry, again.
It's all right. We all do it. Yeah, I mean, and there's... one of the stories, the drop of water, and the image of that woman's face when I was a kid... was just, it was there, it was kept in your head for...
Sign of a good film when it's ingrained.
Yeah, it's still there, I bet.
Yeah. I've never been frightened of horror films. I've just always really enjoyed them. I've never had nightmares or anything like that. Yeah. I've just thoroughly always enjoyed them, but...
You never wouldn't go in the bath after Carrie like me?
No. Mm. No.
How could she weed in it?
No, honestly, Carrie got me when I was a kid.
According to what I found when I was hunting for trivia, the telephone segment was the first Italian thriller, because it's a bit of a stalker one, that one, to be shot in colour. And it's just such a great film. It is. It was international, AIP, American International Pictures, that put the money into it. Because they'd done, I think it was Black Sunday with them.
What year did you say this was? Sorry,
1963.
I'm going to add it to my watch list now. You've already convinced me.
Tarantino cites it as one of his biggest influences.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah.
So you know that's.
And he's never done a horror yet. So.
No, he hasn't. Yeah. But it's what helped influence Pulp Fiction. Do you know the way the stories are?
Yeah. Ah, really? Ah.
So. Which is, I think that's fantastic, and I didn't realise that until I was looking up bits of trivia and found that. It's just such a great film, and there's a Blu-ray out of it you can get, worth finding, tracking down. Make sure it's got the English
dubbing
on it as well, because I've got one which is just Italian, and I didn't check to see it, and I've got the English one as well, so I've watched it both ways.
Does Karloff speak in Italian then as well? Or is
he dubbed. It was dubbed in the Italian version.
Ah, right.
As far as I know, it might have spoke, but I thought it was dubbed.
Right.
But Black Sabbath, not the band, the film.
Yeah.
Go find it. It's not on any streaming services, obviously.
Yeah.
But it is. I think it's on YouTube. If you look on YouTube, it might be on YouTube.
There you go.
So it is worth finding, tracking down, and. Watching. I think Arrow released it as well on Blu-ray in this country, right. So you can get it from HMV and the likes. So yeah, there's my first one, the brilliant Mario Bava anthology Black Sabbath. On to Mr. Wofster.
Thank you very much. I'm literally just
adding it to your watch list.
Yes, yeah, that's it. Cool. Well, mine's not. Well, it was about 10 years afterwards. Mine's the first of the Amicus ones that you mentioned before.
Well, it wasn't the first. That was Dr. Terror. It was about four or five.
Oh, no, sorry. I meant just the one tonight that we were doing is Amicus, because the other ones, So not the first Amicus one ever.
No.
But, yeah. So it's Tales from the Crypt, which
film.
Obviously a lot of people, some people might not know the original film, they might know the TV series, which was released a bit later, but this was the original film, which itself was taken from stories from EC Comics, which
loved reading Tales from the Crypt growing up.
Did you?
Vault of Horror, Tales from the Crypt, Weird Science, which is where Weird Science has a connection because of the name.
It's
the EC connection to Tales from the Crypt, but yeah, so
right.
I was one who grew up reading these comics.
So were they reissues then, I suppose?
Some of them were originals, some of them were reissues.
Oh, cool.
You find them in car boot sales and stuff like that when I was a kid.
Suppose,
my dad done house clearances, he'd pick them up.
Yeah.
You know, same with like Unknown Worlds and Creepy and all that kind of thing. So I was just entrenched watching, reading these stories, and fantastic.
The artistry on them and everything, they just look great. I've never held one in my hand, but they look awesome, the original comics. So, for those that don't know, they're just obviously horror anthology comics from, I think it was the 50s.
Got banned.
And they've got bands and...
Was that the God-fearing people? Of course it was.
Yeah.
Comics are horrible.
It's Satan.
Comics are horrible and should be burned.
Yeah. And who else wanted to burn books?
Yeah.
I'm just saying. And,
but they also released, was it Mad as well, EC?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Which they called a magazine because it got round. Because apparently they got banned. There's some kind of comic law that's got the horror ones banned. So they're called Mad, a magazine, and it just got around it.
I think there was Brand Eek as well. Was Brand another EC one. Yeah, there was a few.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, you two are more the comic book guys than I am. I'm kind of winging it a little bit there. So it's again, like a lot of them, it's five stories. There's some big names in it: Joan Collins, Peter Cushing, Ralph Richardson. Directed by Freddie Francis, who did a few of the Amicus stuff and a few
things. And he did a lot of kind of horror and bits and bobs with Freddie Francis around that time.
Yeah, I noticed he did that, didn't he? I noticed when I came in, The Skull.
Yes, that's such a great film.
Yeah.
Pete Cushing, Chris Lee.
Everything.
I've got a story about The Skull, but that's for another time.
Peter Cushing's one of my favourite actors growing up. Him and Sidney James were just like heroes.
Peter Cushing was the first actor or celebrity that affected me when he died.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I'd watched that many of his films.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You feel you kind of know, you don't know them, but, you know, and it was just... I grew up with his films.
There's not a person listening to this now who hasn't seen a film with Peter Cushing.
Oh, no, definitely not. No.
They haven't seen Star Wars.
They haven't seen Star Wars.
They even brought him back for Rogue One.
Peter Cushing, brilliant. Do you know his last film was Biggles?
No. Of course it was, yeah.
That was his last film he'd done, which I thoroughly enjoyed and I watch and I love it. And
I've never seen it, but you've talked about it a bit.
It's just good. It's just good, silly fun.
Yeah.
Do you want to be a hero?
I put it that and kind of along with something like Young Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
So I love Young Sherlock Holmes as well. A pair of them, I'd watch as a double bill, isn't it?
Sorry, we'll get back to you. We're waffling.
Sorry, I'm waffling too. waffler. So it's five stories. There's one we were talking about before about scenes that kind of live on in your memory. There's one and it's called Wish You Were Here. Basically, it's a variation on the Monkey's Paw story, which I think most people kind of know that you get the wishes, but they're not quite what your wishes were for.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, exactly that. And I don't want to give any spoilers, but there's kind of the way that turns out at the end is horrible. It's really horrible, and it's not particularly gruesome. It's not, there's no visual thing, but what's happening is just horrific.
None of the Amicus ones were particularly gruesome.
No.
You know what I mean?
None of the ones I've seen anyway. No. You'll have seen them all, but any of I've seen.
I got some on VHS.
Mm. Psychological, isn't it?
That which is the best.
It's the suggestion of.
That's it.
Yeah.
But there's so that's certainly a favourite of mine. And then there's a one called Poetic Justice, which is the one that Peter Cushing in. He plays like an old widower that's basically been tortured by a neighbour and.
Grimsdyke, isn't it? Grimsdyke.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and it's kind of I don't want to give any spoilers, but yeah, he kind of. It's a kind of a revenge story in the end, and it's
fabulous. And the makeup on Cushing is superb.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He asked for that. He took a pay cut to take that role because he really, really wanted to do it. And it was one. And he actually based it on himself as well because he'd just become a widower. And he was really upset about his wife, and he based it on himself, the fact that he was friends with the kid, local kids in the area.
He never recovered from the death of his wife.
When I was a kid, I watched Jim Will Fix It. Controversial. And
now then. Come and sit on my lap, Mr. Woff.
And one of the people that he fixed, Wish, or whatever it's called, was Peter Cushing.
The Rose After the Rose.
And yeah, I just beautiful. Happened to watch it, and I was like, Peter Cushing's on Jim Will Fix It, because I fucking loved, Hammer and that. You've got him to... name a rose after his wife as kind of a dedication to his wife.
I never knew that.
Never recovered, bless him, never recovered. There's a photo that does the rounds, and it's from not long before he died. And it's Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing together. And Peter Cushing looks so frail. And,
yeah, yeah.
And you just, your heart just completely goes out to him. Even now, you know what I mean? He was reportedly such a lovely man. And he wore carpet slippers instead of Star Wars.
That's right, yes,
he wouldn't wear the boots, they were that uncomfortable. He was allowed to wear slippers.
If anyone can get away with it, it's
Peter. The only time he had to wear the boots was when he was doing a long shot.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. If anyone can get away with it, to the legend that is Peter Cushing.
Well, I mean, him and Alec Guinness were really the only stars in that song, weren't it?
At the time. I mean, created a lot of stars, but apart from that, who else was big then? There are a couple of good films. John Collins does a good one at the start as well. But basically, it's all based around the fact that they all end up in this catacomb at the start, with a crypt keeper, who obviously becomes the crypt keeper that you all know from the TV shows and etc.
Do you know the guy who does the voice for the crypt keeper in the TV show?
Oh yeah,
I've got him on Facebook. He's funny. He's always posting stuff about the crypt keeper.
Oh right. Oh, that's pretty cool though. Yeah. From the TV series.
I've brain fart. I can't think of the name.
Yeah,
but,
not bad with name.
That was just the thing. Go on.
Sorry. and basically the five people turn up in this catacomb. They don't know how they got there, and he tells them, "I'm going to tell you a story about what might happen in your life." And each one takes a turn. It shows like something that's going on with them, and then it goes through all the five stories, and that's how the anthology is set up. And then there's obviously might be a little twist at the end, but I won't say anything more about that. And
there was always a morality twist in the Tales from the Crypt stories.
Yeah.
In the anthology stories, I was going to mention this later on, but yeah, there's always a beware, or this could happen sort of thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. In every one I've watched in the build up to this, bit of trivia about it. Although all were from the EC Comics, only two were actually from Tales from the Crypt, because they did a variety of different comics. Robert Zemeckis' favourite Halloween movie. Random trivia. I like this one. Stephen King and George Romero considered remaking it together.
Which would have been great, but they ended up doing Creepshow instead.
Ties in with my next choice.
They did something.
There's also tie in every time we do this, and my next one's Creepshow, and this one basically, which is mad. There are little links to the twist that you can spot. So once you've watched it through, or rewatch it, and you'll kind of see things that you missed the first time.
The Joan Collins one with the Santa Claus, Killer Santa, I watch every year. And if you can remember, I put that top ten up, didn't I? And I put the top 10 Christmas horror films last year. And I made like a big reel, and the last one was that story, and I put the whole thing up.
I'd
found it and downloaded it and put it up.
That's a good story, that one. It's a Christmas story as well. I think it's the only one, isn't it? The rest aren't Christmas, but that particular one.
That one is a Christmas one.
I think back in them days, it wasn't so clearly defined, but it's a Christmas film. It's not a Christmas film. Just some films had Christmas in it.
Which was remade for the TV show as well, that one.
Was it?
Which was good as well.
A few of them were remade for the TV shows. That's kind of it, really. It's a good 70s classic. It's five quality stories, some good actors, well directed. You can watch it at Christmas. You can watch it outside of Christmas. Get it watched.
What was I going to say there? You can get it available on HMV. Good double bill.
That was the thing. I was going to quickly trying to see if there was any streams for the.
It isn't.
No, I don't think it is.
No.
It's
Most of these aren't streamed.
No. The first one I'm talking about is.
Right.
But am I?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you don't. Yeah. It's I've got brought up my app for the streaming, but Plex has it free. If you have Plex, whatever that is, you can watch it for free.
Oh well, there you go. Right then. So
there you go.
Are we on to
Daz?
Okay, so my first choice. This is a film I remember watching when it came out. It looks like I was 9 year old. Me and PD, we thought it was 1980, but it turns out it's 81. That's off IMDb. That's what I'm going for. And it's the fabulous Monster Club.
Welcome to the Monster Club.
Brilliant.
Which I've just got the graphic novel.
Oh, have you now?
And it costs us $7.99 directly from Des Skin, who drew it all. And
right then, and is it the three same stories?
Yeah.
Right then. Well, I mean,
and it was available in the old Ham magazine, the old was it the? I can't remember if it was Halls of Hammer or House of Hammer magazine, which changed its name.
Yeah.
And the Monster Club. That's where I read it as a kid as well.
Well, you've got a lot of the actors in there that you know were involved with Hammer and Amicus as well. Producer. You know what's his name?
Milton Subotsky. Who's kind of I'm talking about it and it's your thing.
So the fabulous Monster Club, you've got Vincent Price in there, John Carradine, Roger Sloman, B.A. Robertson does a bit of a turn on the
I'm just a sucker for your love.
You've got the Pretty Things doing a turn in there as well. Simon Ward, Donald Pleasance, Britt Eklund. There's a lot of,
it's a fantastic
quality
cast.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, you look back at it and it is slightly ropey now, but
it's
I still love it. No, it's not scary.
It's not
at
scary
all.
At all. I mean, I was watching it when I was 8 or 9, like I said.
And I was the same.
I will say though, the last story, the very last scene and the last story.
Oh, the girls.
Haunted me.
Yeah.
Haunted me for years and years. By the way, this is available on Amazon Prime. It haunted me for years and years, and I only watched it again the other week, and it's still pretty good.
The first story as well with
Shamrock, yeah,
and the whistle and all that.
I
thought that story was excellent.
Yeah.
You know when he whistled and blew that bird up and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You will still love me.
Yeah.
Do you still love me? You know what I mean? Man. Fabulous.
It's creepy.
Yeah,
not scary.
But no. And the Donald Pleasance. Sorry, I'm taking all the time of the film.
Yeah, you got Donald Pleasance in there, and he's basically a vampire hunter, isn't he?
The beanie.
Yeah. The ghoul story, and it's just a brilliant little. There's only three stories in it.
Yeah.
I don't even know the running time. I don't even know if it's an hour and a half.
No, it's not long. But
I think it's maybe
bits,
an hour and 20.
In it, I mean, UB40 on the soundtrack.
Yeah.
There's that whole the stripper one.
Yeah.
With the animation and stuff like that. I mean, the actual Monster Club, the masks are terrible. So
oh, no, it's going to a crap fantasy.
It's Star Wars Cantina-style masks.
Yeah.
You know, because some of them are pretty bad. Some of them are good, some of them are... like, mask.
Yeah. But it's funny, because they do a story, then they have a song in between.
A little bit of a chat.
And anyway, the story revolves around a horror writer being invited to the Monster Club, and then he gets sat down... And talk.
Well, he doesn't get invited, he gets bitten.
Does he get bitten?
He gets bitten by Vincent Price.
Yeah.
As you do.
And it, just a little bit of lunch.
Yeah.
And then taken to the Monster Club, where he's...
He's welcomed into the club.
By the end of it, yeah.
But incidentally, it's the only film where Vincent Price plays a vampire. Who would have thought that?
Aye.
Yeah.
I thought he'd done another vampire film, but obviously...
That's an IMDb
If that's where you find, you know, you're doing your research on the internet.
Yeah.
Not everything's true on the internet.
No.
Don't take everything we're saying as law, because we're just doing a bit of research. We haven't got all the reference books we can get.
No.
Because we're not paying that kind of, we can't afford to buy... books and books on films and
no.
So we're on the internet, we're looking, and obviously some of these things we might say are a bit ropey. But we don't know if they're true or not.
No, no, absolutely.
I think 99% of it will be bang on.
I think it's
probably
it's not Wikipedia.
No.
You know, it's not like not like anyone just can just add to it.
But I mean, I just put the film in, Google it, and look from everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Articles that have been written and.
But Vincent Price, only time he played a vampire.
Brilliant actor. One of my favourites.
Yeah,
have you seen Dead Heat?
Yes. I'm pretty sure I have.
Came out in the 80s.
Yeah,
buddy cop film, zombies.
Yeah, that's
Vincent Price is in it as well. Fantastic film.
I haven't seen it since then.
Oh, I have.
But, yeah,
I've got it on Blu-ray.
Doesn't surprise me.
VHS. Yeah. It's up there somewhere. Sorry, back to you anyways.
Yeah, bit of trivia for you. The film opened on Vincent Price's 70th birthday, which is lovely.
Oh, yeah. I think it's either side. There's Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing and Vincent Price's birthdays are all
around my birthday. They're all within, because I'm 24th of May and they're all around that area, and I'm like, I'm in the stuff. I'm in the, you know, crowd of legends here.
I've got Christian Bale and Phil Collins on my birthday.
Is that why you like Phil so much?
Well, who doesn't like Phil?
is he your love child? Are you his love child? He denied you.
So I'll give you a body count for the Monster Club. 3 humans, 1 half human and a cat.
That's a good start to a joke.
Yeah.
I mean, again, that last story is just...
No.
It's still superb.
Yeah, it is. Out of the three, that's my favourite.
Yeah.
I think it's the most atmospheric and...
Everything,
And the most haunting, really. Because, you know, I don't want to give any spoilers away, but it's like the village, isn't it?
Yeah.
About the best way to describe it.
But much better than the village. The village is shit.
Christopher Lee was approached to play the role of Chet Wind-Hayes, the Alpha.
Yeah.
But he played by John Carradine, obviously.
I've got quite a few of Chet Wind-Hayes stories. Fantastic to read.
Yeah.
Yeah, worth getting a book and having a read of.
Right. Yeah.
It was shot in a total of 24 days. And it shows, you know, because it's a very simple film. You know, I mean, it's basically the house or the flat.
Well, this is it. They're not
lavish sets.
That's it. And don't forget, I mean, especially the Amicus ones, they were able to get all these big actors.
Yeah.
Because they weren't on set. They were only on set a day, maybe, shooting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then pinch them from somewhere
So they didn't have to pay them much.
I mean,
I mean, Donald Sutherland's in Dr. Terror's House of Horror.
Is he?
Yeah.
Right.
But he wasn't a star then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And this was the final film by director John Ward Baker.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, good director as well.
Yeah.
Another one who made loads in that kind of 60s, 70s era horror.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Patrick McGee's in it, and he only has 8 lines. And that's about it. I mean, there's not a lot of trivia on this, unsurprisingly. And that's it, yeah. So I'll move on to PD with his second choice.
My second choice, again, these aren't particularly our, like, favourites, but it's ones we've watched the most, or ones we want to talk about.
Yeah.
So mine's now coming from 1985. Night Train to Terror is 1985 American independent horror film, directed by J. Sloshberg Cohen, with segments directed by John Carr, Philip Marshak and Tom McGowan. And it's basically God and Satan are on a train discussing the fate of 3 individuals as they and they sit there watching the stories unfold. In the first story, case of Harry Billings, man is kidnapped and taken to an insane asylum. He's put under hypnosis and lures victims to be tortured and murdered as part of an organ harvesting. John Philip Law plays him, who was Diabolique, Sinbad.
Yeah.
So a handsome bloke.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he gets the women in and all that. Of course he back does. To the.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? The second story, The Case of Greta Connors, involves two young lovers who become part of a sinister cult of people fascinated with death. And the final story, The Case of Claire Hansen, involves an apprentice of the devil who's out to destroy mankind and a group of immortals who are trying to stop him. Or a group of people trying to stop him. Excellent. I mean, there's some ropey as hell effects in it, but they're all practical. There's loads of claymation in there where it turns from live action to the person's actually claymation getting eaten by a monster.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, all that kind of stuff. Absolutely fantastic.
Brilliant, yeah.
I mean, you've got...
We love a bit of that.
Well, that's it. On as it starts off, it's a music video as well.
Right.
And you've got this 80s weird music video going on with a weird 80s song that you only ever hear in this song, or I'd only ever heard in this film, sorry.
Yeah.
And it's just weird.
Yeah.
It's just so weird. And it kind of, between the films and the God and Satan talking, the flashback to this music video.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely mental, but yeah, it's all right. So we've got John Philip Law in there as Harry Billings. Cameron Mitchell from Bonanza.
All right, yeah.
Yeah, he's playing a copper in it. Richard Moll. Do you know Richard Moll, the actor? Big, tall. He was in Night Court. He's been in everything. Dungeon Master.
I'm sure I'll have seen
him. If you see him, you'll know him.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He plays two roles. James Hansen in the final story and Otto the Orderly in the first story.
Oh, yeah.
But... Night Train to Terror, it's a weird one. It was cut to ribbons when it was on VHS. Which I think I can remember seeing. I'm not sure if it was on a pirate or we rented it, but I can remember seeing it and thinking it was a weirdo thing.
Bit disjointed. Yeah,
and then I never seen it again until it came out on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
So I've got the Blu-ray, which has got the uncut version on. Full version, but it's pieced together from three films.
Alright, okay.
Cataclysm, which is the last story, which is the Claire Hansen story at the end. The Death Wish Club, which is the Greta Connors segment. I can hear my cat. He's at that door, isn't he? Wanting in.
Right.
It's all right. No, just leave him. The door's open. It's not going to hurt him. He can get through the window. He's a twat. And then Scream Your Head Off, which was an unfinished film, and that was the start, the Harry Billings thing.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, it was three films, cut to ribbons, fired into Make a Night Train of Terror.
Brilliant.
And, again, it's not one that's got a lot of... trivia to find, because you know what I mean. So Vinegar Syndrome released it on Blu-ray, and that's the uncut version of the Greta story, Greta Connors story, and I like it. It's silly. Night Train to Terror, you've got Ferdy Mayne in there playing God. And he played the main vampire in Dance of the Vampires by Roman Polanski. And there's another one, haven't seen it, Dance of the Vampires, find it, watch it, fantastic Roman Polanski film.
I love Roman Polanski stuff, maybe not him as a person too much,
but
great Chinatown. And
have you seen Dance of the Vampires?
I haven't. No, I was looking for more of his stuff.
Sharon Tate's in it as well.
She is, how that ties in, doesn't it? But he was going out with her, wasn't he?
He was with her at the time. She's beautiful in it. Really is. And it was one I'd seen when I was a kid. And I still watch now. It was called Dance of the Vampires, Fearless Vampire Killers, or Pardon Me.
I'm adding that now.
Pardon Me, Your Teeth Are in My Neck.
Because Jess, my wife, loves Rosemary's Baby, and I love Chinatown. I love Rosemary's Baby as well, and we're both like,
Dance of the Vampires is a great comedy vampire film.
Yeah.
Which is worth watching.
Fearless Vampire Killers, it's time, isn't it?
Yeah. It comes under three titles.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've seen it under Fearless Vampire Killers and Dance of the Vampires.
I think Fearless Vampire Killers. That's one I know it by.
And I've got the. I had to buy that. I think it was the Spanish Blu-ray, but it had English language on it. So
I
was happy with that.
Bob's your uncle.
Aye, seen it on Blue. But anyways, back to Night Train to Terror. Night Train to Terror, well worth a look at. It's bonkers. It is. The best way to work is it's completely nuts. Mm. And it just sometimes feels disjointed as hell. But it's one of those, few beers, your mates.
Yeah, that's
a few joints, whatever's your thing. I'm more of the J's than the beers. But yeah, it's one of those, sit down, watch with your mates and take the piss clean out of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've watched it since I've got it on Blu-ray. Oh, I must have watched it about 7 or 8 times since I picked the Blu-ray up.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I watch it again this week because I always watch my films as I'm running up to them, even though I've seen them so many times. But yeah, Night Train to Terror. Brilliant. Get it, watch it, boom. Now over to the Wafster.
Cool, cheers. My next one is again from the 80s. It's got shares a few commonalities with my last one, Tales from the Crypt. And I've already said what it's going to be before. It's Creepshow.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which I did Scream.
Yeah,
both of them.
We had this conversation off mic because I was there, but I thought he played Creepshow 2 and something else, but it logically it's a double bill. As a double bill, 1 and 2 would be a lot more logical than Creepshow 2. And
it was the first double bill we ever did.
Didn't Worship Town.
Bob Horace.
Yeah, that's it.
If Worship Down's got some moments that you remember. Creepshow, love it. It's written by Stephen King and directed by George Romero. So
the legend.
Great partnership there, and as I said before, they'd kind of been wanting to do something together for a while, which this obviously must have come from them wanting to do Tales from the Crypt, a reimagining of that.
Well, I mean, George Romero was attached to so many Stephen King films.
The Stand, and I was reading about this today, was one of them, because they were going to do The Stand in the 70s or the 80s.
Yeah.
And,
well, they did a miniseries, didn't they? Was that the 90s?
Yeah, that was Mick Garris.
Yeah.
Who I've said before, Mick Garris always does.
I really like The Stand.
It was a good start off with Don't Fear the Reaper.
But he always, well, he knows his music. He was in a band, But he always does a good Stephen King film.
Yeah. Someone who can do him justice.
Yeah. And there's not many can. Frank Darabont does. Darabont,
Who did Shawshank
and The Mist?
Yeah.
Do you know he only ever gives Frank Darabont the rights to his films for $1?
Really?
Right.
So there you go. I read that somewhere years ago.
Right.
Frank DeBont gets, if you're doing a Stephen King thing,
yeah,
he gets the rights for $1 because he knows he'll do the...
I'd buy that for $1.
Hi. Had to be said. So back to the Creepshow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so great cast again. We've got Leslie Nielsen.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of trivia, when he was on set, apparently, he used to carry a fart machine in his pocket. And just before George Romero whatever director says when you start
action,
which would be
usually
a bit more common than
usually,
go.
Usually, you know, just from what I've seen in films,
Cult Cinema Club. That was go.
That was my brain fart there. You know, when you kind of, what did they say? Leslie Nielsen, Adrian Barbeau, who's been on quite a lot of films that we've talked about previously. Obviously, John
Beautiful
Carpenter's.
Yeah.
I think she was with John Carpenter at the time.
She will have been at that time. Yeah.
E.G. Marshall,
great actor.
It was the Beverly D'Angelo's dad in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
That's right.
One of my previous ones.
Yeah.
Ed Harris,
in a very early role.
Yeah. Ted Danson.
Yeah,
was. And Stephen King himself, who had pretty much a whole story to himself.
Just him. And let's be honest, that is the weakest story.
It is, yeah, I'd agree.
In the film, you know what I mean? Yeah. But it's still so much fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it is.
Geordie Merrill, that's it, isn't it, Geordie Merrill?
What, the name of the story?
His character.
Oh, yeah, it's Geordie Merrill. I have wrote that down.
There you go.
That
was me off the top of my head. There's no fucking road down there, lad.
Yeah.
No brain fart there.
That's it.
The Lonesome Death of Geordie Merrill.
That's it.
Yeah, so again, 5 stories. Again, inspired by the E.C. Horror books, like Tales from the Crypt, but not actually from them. Just kind of... they even got one of the artists, the original artist of the E.C. comics, to come and do
it. Have you got the comic? The big graphic novel?
Of Creepshow? No.
Oh, get it. It's worth it. No, looks lovely.
I can imagine that would be really good with the artwork on the.
It's classic that Creepshow sort of like image.
Have you watched the Creepshow TV show yet?
I have, yes, yeah.
It's excellent. Yeah, Season 2 soon.
Yeah.
That's on Amazon, is it?
Amazon Prime, you've got to get Shudder. Have you got Shudder?
I have it off and on for a while. I'll go and watch a few things.
Get the free trial for a week.
Free trial will be coming up soon.
Yeah.
I've got it because I've watched stuff on it all the time.
Yeah, I've watched a few things. So it was the artwork. Yeah, it was done by original artist Jack Kamen, who was one of the original EC artists. King originally wanted Graham Ingalls, but he refused. So his second choice was Jack Kamen. But I think he did a bloody good job.
This is the thing with them artists. They got because their artwork for the Tales from the Crypt and all that was so graphic.
Mm. Yeah.
That they got the shit kicked out of them verbally off people.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're a Satanist.
Yeah.
Back in them days, it was different. Yeah, especially in America, with Bible Belt and all that kind of stuff.
That's it.
So you've got 5 stories. I mentioned the Stephen King one, which is probably the weakest one, I think. My favourites would be, I like Something to Tide You Over, the Ted Danson one, which...
Yeah, I'd go with that.
It has a commonality with one that... Daz will mention in his choice, because I won't give away what Daz's is, but they were both written by Stephen King and have a very similar kind of storyline. Mm-hmm. It's Ted Danson, Leslie Nielsen, so great cast straight away. It's basically...
The ones you need.
Yeah. Leslie Nielsen finds his wife cheating with Ted Danson.
Remember to hold your breath.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. So he basically buries his wife and Ted up to the necks in the sand and says, if you hold your
breath... You don't want to give too much away, man.
This is just preamble. I think that's, to be honest. This is the start of the story. So he's saying, buries them up and he says, if you hold your breath, you can survive. And then, I won't go any further than that. But yeah, there's some nice twists after that. And then my favourite story of the lot, and this was the one that possibly creeped me out the most when I was a kid, was the crate.
Absolutely loved it.
And
Fluffy.
Fluffy, which was the name, because basically the story is, and they're in a high school and they find this crate. The janitor finds this crate under the stairs, and it says, "What does it say?" And it says, "Arctic Expedition, June 19, 1834." In it, so he pulls 1834. Sorry, don't say 19. And he pulls it out, and they open it up and. Something's in it, and it's nicknamed Fluffy. Yeah. All the monsters in the movie had nicknames. This particular monster was called Fluffy, and it's a Bonnable Snowman kind of story, really. And
wasn't it Savini who created Fluffy? I think it was.
I think it was. Yeah, I'm sure I read that. Yes. Yeah. One of his earlier ones. I love anything to do with Sasquatch and Yeti. I'm fucking all over this place, and I love the kind of going back in time. The fact that King does as well. It's one of the things I like about King. So it's the fact it says it's from 1834 and they pull it out, and it gets and it's got Adrienne Barbeau in. She gets to meet Fluffy. It's fantastic story, that one. There's another one. I'm going to recant. I think my worst story is the last one. They're Creeping Up on You, which is kind of a Howard Hughes type story. If you don't like bugs, it's not for you.
Yeah, it's cockroaches. I think that's my weakest.
Yeah.
Then Geordie.
Yeah.
Mother's Day is one of my. Father's Day, sorry.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Where's my cake?
Yeah.
Bedelia. Yeah.
That's a good one as well. I'd agree. Those will be my 3 favourites. I might probably agree with you on
that.
With 2 weakest and the 3 best.
3 best, that's it.
A little bit of trivia. King's screenwriting debut. Ted Danson. Oh no, it's kind of a spoiler if I tell that. I won't say this one actually. Anyone that's not seen it,
you're not having that trivia.
No, you can look it up yourself. It's on IMDb. The ashtray from Father's Day is in every story. If you watch the film, the ashtray plays an important role in that film, and it's actually a in every single one if you look hard enough. There's a sign for Castle Rock in The Lonesome Death of Geordie Verrill, which is obviously a King reference.
Thing, yeah. A lot of shit goes down in Castle Rock.
Certainly does, you don't want to live there.
No.
And yeah, and that's kind of all my trivia. So basically, yeah, it's an 80s classic. Well, it's a classic of all time, really. Great, fun man. It's got a sequel, it's also quality.
The third one's shit.
I've never seen the third one, actually.
Third one's shit.
Is it? Right. Yeah, I won't bother then.
And yeah, it's not got King or Romero involved at all. It's just basically Pinch the Creepshow story.
Right, yeah. No, if you need some of the... Yeah, once you've lost all the talent by the third one, you kind of... It's like Home Alone 3.
We don't talk about Home Alone 3.
And 4, where they go back to Kevin McAllister. Isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. There's one with dogs, isn't there? I'm sure I saw there was a Dogs Alone or something it was called. It was basically the same story, but the
Dogs Alone?
Yeah, I don't think it's called that, but I'm sure there's definitely one with dogs, I'm sure.
Fair dudes. Do you not get done for animal cruelty for that?
Well, yeah, maybe if the criminals are the dogs as well. stepping on there, getting things thrown in the face. Right, okay, I'm off topic again. So that's it. Great film. Get it watched. And on to Daz with his next movie.
Right, so my second choice, I'm going a year later than Woff's entry. And this is a great anthology, and to be honest, one of these isn't horror, one of these stories actually nearly makes you cry because it's lovely, but it's the Twilight Zone movie.
Great film.
1983. Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd again.
You want to see something really scary?
I watched this on, we're on a Thursday now, where I watched this on Tuesday night. And it's the first time I've seen it in years, but I knew I loved it then. And I think I actually like it more seeing it now. I thought it was amazing.
There's some dark trivia on that film.
If you want to interject you've got Dan Aykroyd in there, Albert Brooks is in there, Scatman Crothers in there, John Lithgow's in there, Vic Morrow, Kathleen Quinlan. You've got loads of people.
Don't forget you've got John Landis coming off the back of...
American Werewolf
in London.
Yeah. You've got that. So you're four, because it's all directed by four different directors. You've got John Landis, Steven Spielberg, George Miller of Mad Max fame, and Happy Feet, and John Dante.
Mind you, let's be honest, the only film George Miller needs to make is Justice League Mortal.
Yeah.
Oh, he started making, never managed to get.
The cast and everything was fantastic. I'd love to see that film.
Yeah, Chadwick Boseman. It was Armie Hammer. Armie Hammer. Channing Tatum, I was thinking of, but actually it's Armie Hammer.
Was he going to be Batman or was he Superman?
Batman, I think.
Mm-hmm. Such a great cast, and it would have been so good, but the writer's strike fucked that.
Yeah.
So anyways, back to
Jordan. Twilight Zone. So. Like I say, one of the stories isn't horror at all. One of the stories is very Cocoon, I would say. And it's beautiful. It's a lovely little story. And it's a nice little bit of respite from from the madness that goes on in the Twilight Zone. And these are all four stories that have been told in the past by the great Rod Sterling.
Mm.
They've been reimagined,
which often happens with the Twilight. There's a new series out of it as well, isn't it? It's bloody awful, but
I've not watched it in
the 80s reimagining was quite good.
But the other
one story with Scatman Crothers in, brilliant, loved it, really happy, very Cocoon.
That's a Kick the Can one, isn't it?
Kick the Can, that's exactly what it's called. But the other three stories are a bit...
That got reused, I think, in Amazing Stories.
The Spielberg thing. So you've got a story about a boy who can basically want...
Manipulate everything time, space.
Anything he wants. There's some great effects in that as well. Mm. I mean, over the top.
Is that Joe Dante who directed that one, I think?
I would have thought it would be.
I think it is.
When you look at Gremlins...
I might be wrong, but I can't think, you know...
I think Landis did...
anyway. I know which Landis one. Landis
I know Steven
did.
Spielberg did.
Landis done the Vic Morrow one.
Yeah.
Which is what there was a lot of trouble about.
Yeah.
And that's one of the recently. Well, this is why you don't see Landis making films as much anymore because of that film.
You were talking about it.
Was this the death of the kids?
Death of the kids and Vic Morrow, obviously.
Yeah. And there was basically they'd hired some child actors illegally, hadn't they?
Yeah, they shouldn't have been working when
they shouldn't have been working. And there was a helicopter incident and
crashed into them, killed them.
Killed them all. Yeah.
Stunt went wrong.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And poor John Landis as well. He's been done for kind of. I think he got done for it.
No one ever actually. Got charged.
Did they not? Because I know he went to court, didn't he?
But what did happen is the way films were made and the hiring and everything like that was made a lot stricter. So, I mean, it had a... For a terrible, terrible thing, it had a positive outcome for...
Going forward.
But, yeah.
Child labour laws and shit.
Yeah, exactly. But, anyway, we all know the Twilight Zone. It's not always horror. It can be lovely. It can be
It's just something an interesting concept.
But again, morals.
Yeah.
It's all about morals.
Morality. It's all about morality.
Twilight Zone's all about morality. I mean, 1983, and I can't recommend it enough. I mean, I revisited it the other day, and I absolutely loved it. Bit of trivia for you. William Shatner at one point was considered to reprise his role in Nightmare.
He was the original.
Brilliant. Nightmare in 20,000
feet. It suited Shatner's overacting. John Lithgow played him.
Yeah. Sorry, I just said he's the original Gremlin. He was never the Gremlin. He was in the story with the Gremlin.
Yeah,
he never played the Gremlin. I'd pay to see him play a great Gremlin.
Yeah. Shatner had to turn it down due to prior commitments, and John Lithgow was cast in a role. Now, years later, this is brilliant, I love this bit of trivia. Years later, Lithgow would star in the TV series Fair Rock from the Sun.
The big giant head was Shatner.
Exactly. And he was Dick Solomon, sent to Earth. And the big giant head, who was never seen until William Shatner guest starred in the role, Solomon asked him how his trip was. And he said, It was a horrible flight. There was a man on the wing of the plane. Solomon replies, "The same thing happened to me."
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Third Rock was great.
Yeah,
great, underrated. So, according to John Larroquette, he requested to watch the filming of what would become the tragic helicopter scene, but his car was stolen the night before, and he was unable to get to the set.
I do like John Larroquette.
Yeah, he's a
fantastic actor. Night Court again. If you've never seen Night Court, find it, watch it. It's getting remade, but I've seen Richard Moll's in it, Harry Anders.
Yeah,
John Larroquette. Fantastic. Find it, watch it. Night Court.
Yeah,
funny.
So John Landis survived the controversy and legal troubles brought on by the tragedy, but he continued to lead a very successful career in Hollywood. But, like you say, not as successful as it could have been. I mean, he did trading places.
Because he went to... I think the court case was more recent.
It went on for years.
Yeah.
And it went on for years and years.
With the outcome and all that, he's not really made much since it kind of came...
But he's still haunted by it.
Yeah.
He's still haunted by it. He made Trading Places, Three Amigos, Coming to America, but he was always haunted
Beverly
about
Hills
what...
Cop 3.
Yep.
How did he do Beverly Hills Cop 3? Right.
And Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Let's be honest,
is an amazing...
Amazing.
Michael Jackson's Thriller was... You know, we all know what it gets accused of.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to go into that, because everyone's got their own thoughts on it. I know what mine are, personally, and I'm not going to say it. But Michael Jackson's Thriller in the 80s, that VHS...
That was the hottest property ever.
Oh, because you got to see the making of it as well, on it.
Yeah.
Mm.
And you got to see what Rick Baker was doing.
Yeah.
You know, and it was absolutely fantastic. Plus, you got Can You Feel It video on it as well.
Oh, I love Can You Feel It.
Yeah, the video was fantastic.
Oh, I love it. Spreading the love, aren't they?
But that Michael Jackson VHS, the thriller video, I think it still is the best music video that's ever been made.
I think you're right. Well, it's probably the most thought about, over the top music video ever.
Brilliant. Yeah, that's a podcast in itself, the best music video ever made. Music.
Yeah, and there's one that's just came to.
Anyway, I'm just going to wrap this up.
No bother.
So, it's narrated by Burgess Meredith. Brilliant. And also a little bit by Rod Sterling. In the opening titles, in the reflection of the eye, you can see Rod Sterling.
That's a nice little nod.
To the legend. The man.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's me.
He must be dead now.
He's dead now.
Yeah. Yeah. He'd be about 100 odd years old, I suppose, if he wasn't.
Twilight Zone, unfortunately, it's not available to stream anywhere.
Is it not?
No, it's a bit annoying that, because I thought, you know, but it's not. But you know what? Dig it out. You know what? I'm sure. YouTube. I reckon that'll be on there.
Possibly,
yeah.
Revitalise the physical media market and go and buy a DVD or a Blu-ray. Or
exactly.
4K.
Yeah.
Go buy the DVD. If it's not streaming, then it's a fucking shame.
Yeah.
Go and find the DVD, which is still available and probably very cheap on eBay. Yeah. Go to HMV, you'll pick it up there on VHS. Mm-hmm. On DVD, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Fabulous film.
Brilliant, yeah.
And deserves a lot more love. Mm. But because of what happened, it's kind of shrouded in a bit of darkness.
It is. Don't let that put you off.
No.
don't let, you know, death of a really good actor and a couple of kids put you off. That's great. Anyway, we'll move on to PD for his third choice.
Yeah, so my third and final choice, this film was actually made in 2007, shelved for 2 years. Came out in 2009, anthology horror comedy, written and directed by Michael Doherty, produced by Bryan Singer, starring Dylan Baker, Anna Paquin, Brian Cox, and it's Trick or Treat.
Of course it is, yeah. I was trying to remember what it was. Yeah, great film. I love Trick or Treat.
Trick or Treat, which I absolutely adore. I can remember seeing the short, season's greetings, before obviously the film was even.
Not to be confused with Trick or Treat.
No, Trick or Treat.
Yeah, Trick or Treat is the 80s one.
It's the 80s with Sammy Kerr.
Yeah.
Love that film.
Yeah, it's a cracking film.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think that could do with being in with the horror films set around Halloween that aren't Halloween. That's one of the podcasts we're going to be doing in October, isn't it?
Yeah.
Horror films set,
gonna claim that
set
one now.
Around Halloween that aren't Halloween.
Yeah.
So there you go. I saw Trick or Treat, absolutely fantastic film. Little Sam, you know, the spirit of Halloween, as I like to call him. Warner Brothers just didn't really know what to do with it. That's why it was sat on the shelf for 2 years. But everybody, I can remember reading articles, and everybody who'd seen this film were like,
it's amazing,
fantastic. This needs to be watched.
Yeah.
Which it finally, you know, got a release. And I can remember seeing it and just like, this is fantastic.
It's got really good reviews, hasn't it? It's got like, its ratings, what, 7.8?
I don't go with ratings.
No, I know, but, you know, that's all.
If I was to go on ratings, I wouldn't be watching half the film.
No.
I love and adore.
Yeah, all of us.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I wasn't having a go, by the way.
No, it's fine.
But, yeah, it's even got stuff in the Universal Orlando Resort Halloween Horror Nights thing as well.
Right.
But, yeah. It is said that Halloween is the night when the dead rise to walk among us and the other unspeakable things roam free. Rituals of All Hallows' Eve were devised to protect us from the evil mischief. And one small town is about to be taught a terrifying lesson.
Awesome.
And it is, you know, you've got a few stories. There's the principal with Dylan Baker and his son, and he's the principal of the fucking school, and he's putting razor blades in the candy and stuff like that, poisoning kids.
Nice guy.
Yeah. You've got the Halloween School Massacre, which is a bunch of mentally disabled kids who go to this school. The teach the This one actually kind of hits home a little bit, because the parents can't handle it anymore. It's just they're too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the parents are drained, and they pay the bus driver to kind of get rid of them.
Well, I've never been offered that deal.
No.
As a bus driver myself.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it, by the way, I'm just saying.
And do you know something? When I was watching it again, and I just thought of Kerry.
Right, yeah.
Because Kerry's dealing with two of us.
Yeah.
And how tired and things she must be. And she's an absolute legend.
She is.
So it kind of...
She puts you in a bus, just say no.
Eh?
She puts you in a bus, just say no.
Just say no, that's it. Just get on this bus.
If she puts you on my bus.
Just say definitely no. Daz is going to do it. But yeah, and then there's the surprise party, which is Laurie, Anna Paquin and her pals. And that's just fantastic. And the ending on that, you know, you can't give too much away.
No.
Because it's all twists and turns.
All of these.
Yeah. And then you've got Sam, which is, you get to see Sam going up against Brian Cox.
Oh, Brian Cox.
And, you know.
I liked him when he was in D-Ream.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just about to make the same joke.
You mean me?
Things could only get better. Can only get better. So Brian Cox goes up against the spirit of Halloween, and again, there's little twists in that story that hark back to other stories. And what I like about it also is you get the characters from each story kind of overlapping.
Yeah.
You know, you see them in the backgrounds and things, and and there's so many
attention to detail, that is, isn't it? It's nice.
I mean, he's done Krampus as well, which we were talking about.
Yeah, we briefly
which I thought was fantastic, and there's an uncut version of that called The Naughty Cut coming out.
Right, oh.
4K.
Oh.
Yeah, you were saying before, yeah.
So I think Andrew will be going, let's pick that up. But supposedly there's going to be a sequel.
Right.
Which has been announced straight after the original was released. But it's kind of, I think he's doing it at the moment from things I've seen, he's kind of, or he's writing it or something like that. So it's based on Season Greetings, which was a little short, which I think you can find on YouTube.
Right.
So have a look for it. Absolutely fantastic. All the jack-o'-lanterns in the film were either foam or ceramic.
Really?
Well, there was that many that
had to carve. Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
So it would be easier.
Yeah.
And you know yourself, you go to a shop just after Halloween, and how many of them ceramic pumpkins are for like a pound?
Yeah.
You know, they were 15 quid the day before.
Yeah.
Next day, pound.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So,
well, they've got to get rid of it, haven't they?
Well, that's it. They've got to get rid of the stock.
I'm sure.
That's why I bought my Christmas tree on Boxing Day. Still going strong.
We actually bought a Christmas tree on Christmas Eve, and it was dirt cheap.
Right.
Dirt cheap.
And it was only basically the trunk and no fur, no leaves. Yeah. It was dirt cheap. The boy loved hanging the baubles on it.
The bauble.
The bauble and the bent angel.
Do you want to decorate the tree? There's your bauble.
Yeah, that's it, son. But
where's the light? There is no light, son.
The name of the character Sam is derived from Samhain,
the
ancient Celtic festival of the dead.
Oh, cool.
Which is all what Halloween's kind of.
Yeah,
all Halloween's.
Druids.
Anna Paquin's character pagans. Laurie is named after Laurie Strode.
All right.
There's a lot of Halloween references in the film as well.
Oh, that's cool.
Of course, yeah.
Dylan Baker, who played the principal, he won an award for Best Supporting Actor in 2009. Fright Meter Award Ceremony.
All right.
And what's his face? Michael Doherty, he got the Best Director at the same time.
Oh, brilliant.
So, you know, I mean, he's not really made a lot, you know.
No.
But I do hope they do Trick or Treat 2, because I thoroughly enjoyed it. There were 18 drafts of the script.
Bloody hell.
Which is just mental.
Yeah.
When he wrote the script, he had Dylan Baker in mind as the principal because of his role in Happiness. Have you ever watched that twisted film?
Yeah, I have no. Is that the Philip Seymour Hoffman?
The paedophile one and all that.
Never seen it.
It's a bit. Yeah, he sticks like a post-it note to the wall or something with something rather nasty, if I remember.
Yeah, it's a long time. It's one of those one watch only. It's a bit like.
Requiem. Requiem for a Dream.
Oh, that was different to that.
Yeah.
No, but it's a tough film to watch.
Yeah. I was going to say. It doesn't matter. Because I've just had a brain fart. The line, "You've got to be fucking kidding me," spoken by Cox in the Seven Hand scene with Sam,
is from
The Thing.
Yeah.
You know,
as soon as you said it, I was like, right, Cox, right,
yeah.
I did want to steal your thunder.
Which Michael Doherty was a fan. I'm coming to the end anyways. And there was a lot of practical effects in it, just helped along with a little bit of CGI, which I don't mind.
No.
You know what I mean? I don't mind that.
Because at the heart of it, they're still trying to do it right.
They're still doing practical effects.
Yeah.
Gotta love practical effects.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So, Trick or Treat, very, very new, 2009, obviously it was released. It's hard to get hold of.
Is it?
On Blu-ray.
I've never seen it streaming.
No, it's hard. It's,
was it released on Blu-ray? Cause I'm,
yeah, I've got it.
And I need to get down Blu-ray, because I do love it. I love that film.
Have you got a bit of that?
Yeah. But it depends how much is it like about 50 quid or something like that?
Well, I didn't pay that much. I got it when it was kind of first released, but it's a fucking hard one to find and get hold of.
Really?
I was looking for a film on eBay the other day, Gates of Hell, City of the Living Dead, and 50 quid, and I thought, it's on eBay, 50 quid, and I thought, fuck it, I'll bounce that. City. It's Fulci's thing, because I want the rip off it for screening. I thought, fuck it, you know what I mean? I'll jump on that. And it was just about to buy it, 50 quid. Put it all in, just about to. It had gone up to 90 quid with import charges.
Jeez,
and postage.
Yeah, Christ.
And I was just like, do you know something? I'm not fucking paying 90 quid for
Blu-ray. No.
You know what I mean? When I can buy a big box set with shitloads on for that price.
Silly money.
For one film, I think I have spent like 50, 60 quid on one film.
Yeah,
I've done this for records.
You know what I mean? But only because I've missed it. I've won. Yeah. So but Trick or Treat is hard to find.
Yeah.
On Blu-ray, you might pick the DVD up cheaper.
Yeah.
But a Blu-ray of it is hard to find.
You know what?
It's also same.
I'm always all right with having a DVD.
You know something? It might not be now. It might be because there's more options open from when I bought it. You might be able to get it on Amazon Germany or Spain or France or Italy, something like that. I always have a book on them.
Get it for Halloween, because that's, to be honest, when we're picking these out, I think I picked mine before for you, but I completely forgot about Trick or Treat. And if I had remembered, I would have snaffled it. But
that's for one of the first films I mentioned, wasn't it?
Yeah. So as soon as you said it, I was like, fucking hell, Trick or Treat. Yeah, great film.
Oh, there's so many. I mean, there's been so many anthologies that I've missed out that I would have happily.
Yeah. We can always go back to this.
Yeah.
Oh, we did kind of it because, I think we could do another horror anthology one, to be honest.
Absolutely. Yeah. If we do it in a year's time or something.
Yeah, that's it. Do it again.
Yeah.
With different films. Because there's that many that we like.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a great genre.
We can actually do a complete 80s horror anthology one as well. Just 80s.
Yeah.
But there
we go.
Something to look forward to.
Yeah, that's it. Trick or Treat. Fantastic film, thoroughly enjoy it, love it to bits. Find it, watch it. It's not on YouTube and all that, but there we go. That was my last one for the night. So over to the Wafster.
Thank you.
Wafster the Waffler.
So my final one is, it's a newer one. So I think I might be kind of on my own on this one, because I know PD doesn't particularly like it, and Daz has never seen it, so this one might be a quick one.
I won't be saying much on it. I know that.
This one's Southbound, which is a 2015 film. It's relatively low budget, so the cast's no big names.
It's shit. It's shit.
It's not shit. It's different opinions, but it's by the same guys that brought VHS. So if you like that area, then I think you're in the right area with this. And it's again another modern anthology. It's got each story is by a different director, which is often done with anthologies.
Yeah.
So you've got a guy called Matt Bettinelli, who did a great film I saw recently called Ready or Not. Which is really good. I highly recommend that. And he's currently down to do the new Scream, so he's kind of got quite big.
Scream 5, and they're just calling it fucking Scream. Are they stupid as fuck?
I hate it when they do that. They did that with Halloween, they did it with The Thing as well. It's just it's confusing and annoying. You've got David Bruckner, who did he did a film that I loved that was on Netflix a couple of years ago called The Ritual.
Where they go into the... is that the Stag Night?
No, it's one of them dies. Which where they go into Scandinavia. There is one with a Stag Night.
There is one called The Ritual with the Stag Night, which is quite good. It's a British one.
It's got Burry's son in it.
Aye.
Is that this one?
Well, someone dies in a shop, like, and then one of them doesn't, and Spall doesn't help him. He wanted to.
I haven't watched it, so this is just the beginning.
Basically to make up from yours wanting to go for a walk, so they go out to Scandinavia and.
So it's like without a paddle.
Kind of, very similar. She has a lot of common thing. But yes, I fucking love The Ritual.
I've seen it. I've saw it and I was like, oh, I'm going to watch that.
Yeah.
And then when I went back to find it, it fucked off on Netflix.
The same thing.
And I was like pissed off because I was right in the mood for it. That was the sort of thing I wanted to watch.
I've seen it twice. The first time I watched it on Netflix, and I wanted to watch it again. And I had to get a dodgy copy, to be honest, because I couldn't find it on Netflix anymore. I bloody love that film. He also did another film that's just out at the moment that I really want to see called The Night Out. It's getting really good.
Out soon. I think it's out on Blu-ray soon.
I think it's out at the cinema, but not Carlisle for you, of course. But it is out the one. That's getting loads of good reviews at the moment. I'm really fancying that. All the other directors have not done a lot, but Ready or Not's fucking brilliant. Ritual's brilliant. Night House is meant to be brilliant. So it's again typical anthology setup. Five interlocking stories, all set along a US desert highway. So the first one's called Two Men on the Run from Something, and it's these two guys that they're running away from something, and you don't really know what, but there's these kind of floating, like ghostly things following them, and it's what you were talking about before, that it's getting your comeuppance in anthologies. Right. This film's very much about that, and it starts and ends there.
It's shit.
next time you can talk about film that I don't like. Sometimes I bite my lip.
I'm sorry,
but I'm not going to bite my lip next time.
I'm sorry.
The next one's Band on the Way to a Gig, which is it's kind of a cult story. It's like they get this band of all female band are travelling, and they get caught up in a cult, and it's all a bit messed up. Then there's kind of a werewolfy story, and then there's a creepy one where this guy, probably my favourite story, is this guy, it leads on from the culty story where he accidentally hits this girl from the end, and he ends up taking her to hospital,
right?
And it's just this deserted hospital, and the town's deserted, but he's on the phone call to like a 911 call, and they're telling him to do all this stuff, and it gets really grotesque, and like it's quite like minging what he has to do, and like it's quite gooey, and all physical effects again, and but like all like nasty. That's probably my favourite of the stories.
I thought this would be right up your street, PD.
I watched it and I didn't enjoy it.
Right, okay.
Every Halloween on the group, I do like the 31 days of horror. It's something I've always done before groups and things like that. So if anybody's saying, I've done it since I was a kid. And I just didn't feel it.
It's fair enough. I don't like, because I think I, like
we, it's we me have, and modern horror. But
yeah, I think that's it. Like I know that you have a there's a lot of modern horror that you don't like. You still like bits, but most of it you think is a bit.
A lot of it is pretentious. Vitch and Midsommar and.
Vitch is shit, but Midsommar's awesome.
And I've watched. No, it isn't.
You've seen Midsommar?
Yeah, and I didn't.
Because the last time I saw you, hadn't seen it.
No, so I watched it and I still was like.
It is very pretentious, but it's good.
Do you like Get Out though?
Hey?
Get Out.
Aye, that was alright.
Get Out, I could, because Get Out has a bit more of a kind of a, like an 80s vibe to it. It was a bit more of a kind of retro,
yeah,
not as serious. A lot of I think the modern horror that you don't like is the stuff that takes itself really fucking
way
serious.
Too serious, and it does.
And that's why I never.
See, I've still not seen Midsommar, and I've been quite looking forward to it, and you've put me off it.
Yeah, it's relentlessly dark. It's really, really fucking dark.
I like that shit. Yeah.
St. Maud. That was another one.
St. Maud.
That's relentlessly dark as well.
That was a letdown. Bridie and I, we rented that. We actually rented it off bloody Virgin Stores, whatever, and we both cried at the end at the waste of money.
Right, no, I like a modern pretentious horror, but I know like, you guys like, but I wouldn't recommend
the Lighthouse. Everyone goes on about it.
It's awful.
It's just basically Robert Pattinson wanking off a fucking mermaid.
That's what I said. Yeah, I mean, I'm standing up for the pretentious stuff, but I'll go for. I can't remember the director's name, but the guy that did The Witch and did Lighthouse. Those are both shit. I will stand up and say they're too pretentious and wanky. I don't like them. But
if you want to see someone get wanked off by a mermaid,
not wanking a mermaid off even.
Yeah. It's nice, yeah. Both absolutely rubbish. Like, but again, meant to be. I mean, like the Babadook. I don't particularly like the Babadook.
I didn't mind the Babadook.
I was also expecting it to just take off a bit more, and it never quite got there.
Right, let's get back to shit film Southbound. Sorry, mate.
I don't like.
I know. most of my films you've not seen.
Fair play, yeah.
Some of
the really shit ones you've not seen. So we're all right. Sorry, I do apologise.
That's all right. So, no, you're allowed to. Like, yeah, of course we all. God, I mean, we shouldn't be. On here, like, not just kind of biting our lips and pretending we like each other, giving each other lip sync and sucking each other off. If we don't like something, we should be able to say we don't like it. It's of course, because who wants to just hear a lot of people agree for an hour?
Well, that's it. Yeah. A laugh.
Yeah.
Anyways, back to you.
So, again, not a lot of trivia. It's the characters in the. One of the things Shane, Kate, Jem, and Daryl were all named after members of the Pogues.
Really?
So I'm assuming the directors were Pogue fans.
Someone has to be.
You know, like the Pogues. Oh, I like a bit of the Pogues.
I don't mind, just the odd song.
Yeah, no, I do love a bit of Shane.
Right, cool.
There's lots of connections between the stories, as often is, that you don't really notice until you're looking closely. There's Fabian Teresa, one of the actresses. She is involved in an accident. Her arm's bent backwards, as you often have in films, and that's actually her. She's like double jointed.
Oh, right.
So she did that without anything special. Always
handy.
Yeah, especially if you're doing something like that. It's Southbound, out in 2015. I forgot to see if it was anywhere. It's probably out to buy, which I would advise anyway.
I've never actually seen it pop up on anything, because I think I'd probably give that a whirl.
The poster's just
the piss PD off.
It's
I like a lot of shit, yeah, as we know,
but not pretentious shit.
I know, because that's why I don't think like I'd never, like, when I saw St. Maud, I thought I liked it. But I didn't say to you watch St. Maud, because I thought PD won't like St. Maud. That's like the last thing he's gonna ever want to watch. I thought that would be his anti-PD horror film.
St. Maud was missold to me.
It was.
It was missold by everyone. By everyone. Everyone missold me that film. Oh, it's the best British horror for years and years. Yeah. I watched it and I was like,
yeah, shit.
The bit I did like, I did get a jump at the end.
No, that's an absolute jump.
Yeah, I saw at the cinema, yeah. I shat my pants at that bit.
Great jump.
There was a good jump scare.
But you spoil that now.
Sorry, people. I really enjoyed it. So I would recommend it. I'll leave it at that. Over to Daz.
I'll say no more on this subject.
Okay, for my third choice, it's a 2015 film, and Southbound.
I've never seen that.
It's shit.
I'm going 1985, and I'm going for Stephen King's Cat's Eye.
Beautiful.
Great film.
I was meant to get this watched through the week, and I've had a busy week. And I didn't manage to get it watched. I watched it a couple of years ago.
Too much wanking off mermaids.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's not on video, is it? You've got little Drew Barrymore in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Hot off, well, not really hot off, a few years after E.T.
Hot off
Firestarter.
Firestarter was great. Another Stephen King adaption.
James Woods in there.
Quitters Inc. My favourite story on the whole thing.
Quitters Inc. Yeah, you've got Quitters Inc., The Ledge, and The General. And The General, I think I like The General.
But when you hear James Woods, do you not just go, Peace Candy? Peace Candy. Peace Candy. Peace Candy. Peace Candy.
I fucking love James Woods.
Is it a bestseller? Bestseller. Brian Dennehy, James Woods. Fantastic. It's out on Blu-ray.
Right.
One of my favourite James Wood films. Mm. Find it, watch it, enjoy it.
Mm. Yeah, I like James Wood. He's good at being sleazy.
Well, he's good in this.
Is he sleazy?
I won't tell you a lot about it.
Right. Because he's sleazy in Cat's Eye, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's not likeable. I like that about him. I like him in Vampires as well.
Vampires is fabulous.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
he gets a lot of hate, that film.
It does, I don't know why. Vampires 2 does with...
I've never watched it.
John Bon Jovi.
Oh, yeah, I'm coming out. I didn't watch it.
Oh, he's got it. He's fucking got it.
On VHS.
Jesus Christ.
Each, and I paid £2 each for them. That's what the two's on the
end. Well, I'd pay £4 for the first one.
That was just a hire, just never returned them.
Yeah. But yeah, fucking... Yeah. Honest to God.
So, yeah, anyway, you've got... Alan King's in there, Kenneth McMillan, who was in Dune and Amadeus, Robert Hayes,
Rock Me
Airplanes,
yep,
Striker, yeah. Charles S. Dutton, who's in bloody loads, Alien 3, Legion.
I think he killed a man.
What, in real life?
In real life.
Did he?
I think it was an accident though, so he did do time but didn't do a lot.
Jesus.
Like Leslie Grantham.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry, go on. I'm not sure on that, but I'm sure I've just read recently about it.
Anyway, Charles Dutton.
My solicitor advises that this is just an allegation.
Yeah.
So, we've got three stories by Stephen King, loosely, I use that word loosely connected by a cat.
Yeah, that's the cat.
And it's a very, very, very loose.
Yeah, cat. You know, the cat just appears in every story.
Yeah, I mean, I think the film was meant to be a different way, and the cat made a lot more sense, but it was cut to fuck. And, you know, that happens in films and stuff like that.
I enjoy it. It's a great film.
I love it. I watched it recently.
Yeah. I haven't watched it in a while, but I remember it always being a really cracking film.
Cracking film.
And I'll tell you what, you try and find it. Like, if you. Practical,
the product in your hand over streaming any day.
Oh,
you can't find half the films you want to watch.
You're lying.
Unless you may, because I've got them here in the collection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you try and find something in here.
Well, at the moment, yeah.
I mean, there is stuff that's on show, but there's so much stuff that's behind and
round. Which all needs sorted, but I just can't sort it, can I?
I know, we'll sort that out.
Man. I know, you just keep saying that. But it'll take, the thing is, it would take at least a weekend. I'd need you for a weekend.
We'll get it sorted.
I'd buy you your tea and things.
Oh, good.
We could do a bit by bit. Just go up for a few hours and then another few hours another time and just kind
of... But you'd have to... It's emptying everything out to find where everything... You know, so it all goes in the right place at the right time. But anyways, back to Daz.
This is probably quite...
Cut. We're talking about sort of this bloody space out here anyway. there's some really... it's really good. The troll in the third story is amazing. He's one of the most little menacing little bastards ever. And much better than Troll out of Troll. and Troll 2. It's just like,
well, I love Troll, and I love Troll 2, and I love Troll 3 Under Control.
I was reading shit. Something about Troll 2.
It is. Troll 2.
Troll 2 was terrible. Troll 2 was terrible, but I fucking love it.
So do you.
Yeah. Anyway, I'll just give you a bit of trivia, because I don't have much on Cat's Eye, because I didn't watch it like it was supposed to. So Stephen King wrote the script with Drew Barrymore in mind, because the producer, Dino
De Laurentiis.
De Laurentiis, that's exactly it, was impressed by a performance in Firestarter.
Firestarter.
If you've never seen Firestarter, cracking film.
Yeah.
It was the first Stephen King film to receive a PG-13 rating, to make sense. And there was a bit, where was it? Oh yeah, there was the short story by Stephen King, Sometimes They Come Back, meant to be included in it.
They made a film, didn't
they? Yeah, two or three films.
So
the sequel as well, I think.
They said, no, that's got legs, that.
Yeah.
We're not putting that
sometimes
in there.
Sometimes they come back again.
They never left.
Is that what the third one was
called? I don't
know. Oh, right. The second one was called Sometimes They Come Back Again, wasn't it?
Yeah, Sometimes They Never Left.
Sometimes they hide under the couch.
In the beginning of the film, you can see Cujo and Christine.
Oh, can you?
Yeah. Oh, on the sidewalk, on the street.
Right.
I forgot that Christine Carr is in Trick or Treat as well.
Oh, really?
Oh, the Plymouth Fury. That's what it is. Yeah. The Plymouth Fury.
I couldn't think of the bloody name of the car, but yeah. That was in...
Christine, mate.
Spotted that in the background. Yeah. Spotted in the background and went, it's Christine.
Yeah. And during the showdown in Amanda's bedroom, you know, the... don't want to give too much away. There's a Muppet Baby's balloon. And Frank Welker, who did the voice work in this movie, voiced Kermit, Skeeter, Beaker, and loads of other real things in Muppet Babies.
Oh, I fucking love
the Muppet Babies.
Muppet Babies, they'll do the same for you.
Emily loves the Muppet Babies.
Does she?
It was Milton's... Oh, you can say his name much better than me. Milton Sobotsky's... Sobotsky's?
Yeah, Milton Sobotsky.
Last horror anthology film, but the first of his four Stephen King films.
Yes. There you go.
And there's one little bit more. Where was it? In the ledge, Kressner, the dude walking the ledge, is flipping through a magazine, and it's the July 1976 edition of Penthouse,
which featured
the story that it was based on. So it's like paradoxical.
Because King used to write Penthouse, didn't he?
Did. Yeah. Which is that's amazing, yeah.
That's meta.
That's what that is. So, I mean, I haven't really got much more on this.
No bother.
But that's me. Cat's Eye, get it watched. It's not on any streaming services. And to be honest, even if you try and find it, you'll bloody struggle. Because it comes up with cat's eyes, as in the middle of the road. But
there we go.
Anyway, there you go.
That's Daz's 3, my 3, Woff's 3. I'll give a few honourable mentions. A recent one, The Mortuary Collection. That's excellent. Clancy Brown's in it.
Oh,
Nightmare Cinema, which is Mick Garris involved again, and loads of that's fantastic. Really going to love that. Tales from the Hood, which came out in the 90s.
I remember that coming out.
That's worth a watch.
Yeah.
Great one. Tales of Halloween, which has got Neil Marshall. I think he does some stories on that. That's a fantastic one to watch. Freaky Fairy Tales, which came out in the 80s, which is up there somewhere.
I've never seen that.
That was really good. And it also got released as Dead Time Stories, so I can remember hanging it twice because of the two different titles.
Dead Time Stories, that
yeah. Tales That Witness Madness, which was out the same time in the 70s as a lot of the Amicus ones, and a lot of people kind of lumped it in, but that was from, I think I mentioned it before, Tygon, I think, done that one. Trilogy of Terror, which was a TV movie one with Karen Black and the little Zuni, little stabby little,
yeah, I know, I remember that,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, if you, yeah,
yeah, yeah,
yeah, if you've ever watched Comic Book Men, they've got the figure, yeah, the
that's
little
right, that's
yeah,
right.
yeah. Have you watched that comic book man?
Comic book man, no.
Oh, you should. It's on
Kevin Smith. It's all about Jane, Silent Bob, Silent Stash.
The comic book really good, excellent.
Oh. It's on Amazon.
Yeah. Tales from the Dark Side, which has got Debbie Harry in, and that's another Romero attached to it.
Yeah, it is.
Grim Prairie Tales, which was the 90s. I think it was late 80s or early 90s, I can't remember the date on it. But that's fantastic, and that's got Brad Dourif in it and James Earl Jones. It's set in the West.
Oh.
I've got on DVD, French DVD of it, and it does deserve a lot more love and a clean up and a release on Blu-ray. But there are a few honorary mentions. As I say, I think we're going to do, because there's that many that we like, I think we'll probably do another horror anthology one next year.
I'd like to, yeah.
Yeah, I think we're up for that.
Yeah.
And we're definitely going to do...
An amicus one,
and that won't be set round October or Halloween. It'll just be, we'll fit it in there, because we all love the Amicus stuff.
Yeah.
And it deserves the love, and it deserves a podcast to its own, to be honest.
Yeah.
Even though we've talked about Tales from the Crypt.
Well, we've touched on it.
Tales from the Crypt, and obviously the Monster Club.
There is a Monster Squad as well.
Which is excellent. Which we will talk about. The Monster Club, which wasn't Amicus, but it was the same producers and everything, and it kind of gets lumped in with the Amicus lot, and I love it, and it's just silly and fun. So we'll do an Amicus one. I think we've got a lot, this next 6 weeks. We're going a bit horror daft.
Yeah.
And then once we've done the horror, I think we're going to start getting ready for the Christmas ones. You know what I mean?
Yeah, can't wait.
Yeah,
Expect Gremlins.
Yeah, expect Gremlins. Die Hard is not a Christmas film.
Die Hard is a Christmas film.
No, it isn't.
Yeah. Oh, fuck off.
So
that's going to be my first choice.
Yeah.
What was it I said to you on Saturday that caught you out? I said, would you watch Die Hard in July? And you went, yes. And then I said, would you watch Santa Claus the Movie in July? And you went, shit, you got me.
That's it.
I've had a few beers.
You can watch Die Hard at any time.
That's
my thoughts on what a Christmas movie is.
It's set at Christmas, but you know, it's like Lethal Weapon.
I
never see Lethal Weapon as a Christmas movie. Yeah.
Exactly, but it's set just like.
But I said Trading Places, and you said Trading Places in a Christmas movie.
I'd watch Trading Places all year round. I'd watch that.
Yeah, but it's not a Christmas film.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll cast Trading Places.
It's very Christmassy. But
very Christmassy.
July.
He's dressed as a Santa.
Stealing food.
We should stealing that salmon.
We should just have a podcast where we just go through every film and regimentally put them into Christmas and non-Christmas films for everyone.
Can I just say, Jamie Lee Curtis's breasts?
as a child,
that's a podcast on its own.
Still. They're the most perfect breasts in the world.
Mind you, we were watching a film last night. Not Cat's Eyes. Wildcats. Goldie Hawn.
American football thing.
Yeah. And there's a scene in it where you see Goldie Hawn in the bath.
Right.
And you see her boobs. They're very small. Yeah, and I was something I've never, because I'm not like really, you know.
I'm
just surprised. I said to Kerry, I says, my God, I never realised that Goldie Hawn's boobs were that small.
It's like her daughter, Kate Hudson, one of the hottest women alive, I think. Same.
Yeah, it just happens. Yeah. So, right, we're going to...
let's
wrap this up, shall we?
I finished it all out.
Yeah.
I kept quiet.
it's fun. We're not being lechy, we're just pointing out the thing.
It's all very...
We were teenage boys when we've seen a lot of these films, don't
absolutely, you? Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Trading Places when I was a teenager. Yeah. Wow, I re-watched that scene with Jamie Lee Curtis over and over again.
So like, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you all for continuing to listen to this utter madness that we spout out each week. Thank you all. And we'll call it a night. And this was the Cumbrian Cult Cinema Cast. It's a Paperfoot production for the Cumbrian Sound and Vision Network. And the producer, as always, is Nick Brownlee and my good self. So thank you all. Good night and God bless.